And welcome to a very fun edition of the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Oh my god, the panic is real, guys. This is a coronavirus episode. It's great for those of you guys who listen to us. It's not great. For those of you guys that listen to us, Chris and I actually don't record in person. So this is very, we can still do this.
Yeah, we're really taking social distancing to the
extreme.
We've been distancing for a couple of years now.
Yeah. So welcome to episode 87. The entire world has been impacted by coronavirus. It's not a joke out there. I hope everyone out, you know, everyone that's listening is safe and is healthy. And you guys are practicing your social distancing skills and staying 6 feet away from each other. Because each city is kind of handling this thing different. Each state is handling it differently. So, and it's impacting entertainment. So there isn't really much else to talk about besides how coronavirus has kind of put a damper on Hollywood and entertainment.
Yeah. The hell happened? I remember what life was 2 weeks ago.
Even last week.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's just, this is a pretty unbelievable, actually, what's going on there. And hopefully everyone's safe, and if you're home, you're enjoying your time home. And, yeah, I mean, there's, we have no box office to discuss.
No. Well, actually, I mean, Onward.
I didn't even look at it because it's, I mean, the numbers are virtually irrelevant.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty stark and bad, but Onward apparently had a great weekend.
Great. That's it. It's the last weekend that it has anything, because every movie theater is closed. AMC and Regal have completely closed their doors. Many states and cities have shut down movie theaters, period, regardless. Yeah, I did hear something, though, that, and I don't know if there's anything to this, but apparently there are some studios that are thinking of the idea, I guess depending on how long this goes, of releasing some of their new releases for rent, like $20 rentals at home.
On demand. Yeah.
Which makes sense. I mean, it's
NBC Universal.
Is that what one of them was?
Yeah. Yeah. NBC Universal confirmed that they will... they will be going straight to on demand.
No, oh yeah. I mean, why not? Because first of all, it's a nice way to test what is probably the future of releasing movies, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's still always going to be, a need for like the theater experience, but I mean, for the most part, I mean, so many people are watching movies at home now. Anyway, why let them? I mean, granted, if they don't want to pay for a movie, they don't want to pay for a movie. But if you have an option of paying, you know, for your movie, especially if they figure out a way to build in like some type of ownership down the line, right? Like if, because a $20 rental, I mean, yeah, that's about the cost of a ticket.
Sure.
But still, I mean, you know, there are people that are still going to, you know, if they're watching these movies bootlegged at home, maybe they'll think about $20 to watch it at home, but if you build in some type of like ownership option for like down the road, like in 6 months, you'll be able to get like a digital copy of it.
Mm.
You know, maybe that, I mean, they're going to have to start getting creative anyway, but this could be a good way to test that out, to see what the market
I'll tell you what, man, if Disney Plus was like, you're already subscribed to our service, here's what we're going to do. You're going to get, because you're subscribed, you're going to get Black Widow. I'm just making this shit up. Black Widow for like $15. I would do it. I don't even care if I own it, to be honest with you. Because I know at some point it's going to come to Disney Plus. But like that connection would be that. I mean, that's a sweet pot for me. I'd be like all over that. I'd be like, release Black Widow. I'll pay $20 to see Black Widow at home. But we're not seeing it at all. Canceled.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, without any movie theaters open, you can't release movies.
I mean, that sucks, dude.
Well, I mean, it makes sense, but yeah, I mean, look, that's why you know, if people are going to be home and they're not going to be able to go out, you would think that I don't expect them to release Black Widow for home rental, right? But you would think this is a great way to people are home. They can't. There's nowhere to go at night, right? I mean, at least here. I mean, we're in New York. There are no bars. There are no, and it's just a lot of places now. No bars. No restaurants that you can sit in. You know, no movie theaters. No gyms. Nothing. So you know, it's a great time for them to maybe test something like that out. Yeah. I mean, why not?
I mean, that's where they would lose their money, right? Because it's one for all.
Well,
so maybe if they did like a, I don't know,
they'd right? Have to obviously, that that's somehow, well, that right? was that whole the original concept was when they, I mean, a while back they were toying with this idea and trying to figure out how they would make it work. And it's like, you know, they were going to rate the price was going to be a lot more, right? If you were going to buy something for the home, because they were going to build in the idea of like, well, you know, you could be multiple people could be watching it.
Mm-hmm.
But if they figure out a way to distribute it where they're going to keep a majority of the cost, you know, so like Disney has Disney Plus, right?
So
you're getting a subscription fee for that. And then you're going to have the rights to, you know, then if you can release your own stuff and charge people $20 for it, well, you know, you're keeping all of that now at that point. So maybe not having to do the theater splits makes it worth it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know,
I'll tell you, man, even if they were like $25, I think $25 would be my max to see a film, like a new film. But I would expect, like, you know, I can replay that as many times as I, you know, as possible. I don't necessarily mean ownership, but I'd be like, I need time with that movie if I'm paying $25 with it. But the interesting thing is Black Widow. So Black Widow was scheduled for May 1st. That got moved. It actually didn't get moved because there isn't a date. It's not on the slate anymore, right? So who knows what Disney might have in store for that. I mean, there could be an opportunity for it to get some, you know, some kind of interesting digital play. So we'll see. Other films impacted, Fast 9 or F9, whatever.
Well, that got very impacted. I mean, they didn't even play around. They're like next year,
2021.
Yeah.
Which makes total sense.
Yes,
man.
It does.
It's not a holiday movie.
Nope.
It's not going to work.
And it's a movie that relies very heavily on international box office, especially China. And we all know, obviously, what went on there. I mean, they're just getting kind of back to regular life somewhat over there in China. Things have just started to reopen now. So it's going to be a little while for them. And, you know, the other thing, too, is, you know, it's not just the effects of the coronavirus, right? It's how it's impacting economies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, well, once we hit our peaks and we start to get over this, like everything will be. No, there's still financial recovery that's going to have to happen now. So it makes a lot of sense to wait a year. Just let things kind of build back up again. And especially if you're going to be that reliant on international box office and especially China. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, Mulan got pushed.
Even though some people did see it, there were like early releases.
There were. Yeah.
They got to see it.
Yep.
That's cool. Who knows? I don't even know if I don't remember the date, if there was a date for Mulan. But yeah, that's when I got pushed. Productions have stopped. Film production.
Yeah.
So production on The Batman has been halted for 2 weeks.
Yep.
All production on some of the Disney Plus shows like Falcon and the Winter Soldier and WandaVision have all hit pause. And who knows when those are going to kick back up.
Yeah.
I think they're all taking a 2 week break and then they're all going to be on this wait and see approach.
Yes.
So this is a big deal. Not only, I mean, obviously entertainment is impacted. I mean, our whole way of life at this moment has been completely upended. So we'll see. I mean, everyone's like, oh, two weeks. We'll see. I'm like,
well, I mean, I think they're looking at it in these 2 week intervals, because as we've seen, a lot can change in a 2 week period of time, both negatively and positively. So,
I mean, our show last week was completely different. We were only talking about one movie.
Yes.
At the time.
And by the time the episode had come out a couple days later, then the Fast 9 stuff came out and all that. But yeah, I mean, that just tells you how a week makes a big difference. So, you know, everything right now, they're looking at it in, like, at least for here in the United States, you know, 2 week intervals, and figure it out, see whether how it goes. I don't really know. You know, it's just a strange time. I mean, you know, and we're heading right into, like, a busy season. I mean,
yeah,
you know, people you would think right now would be kind of really looking for entertainment and some type of an escape. And, you know, they're actually, you know, turning to Netflix. And so Netflix is having a little bit of a revival and
sure.
a boost.
I mean, I've been watching it for sure.
Yeah.
Just before we got on here, I was, watching an episode of Narcos, which I adore. Hey, you know what Disney capitalized on the moment by releasing Rise of Skywalker early. So sorry for all of those who've been following me on Twitter, because I've kind of picked that back up again.
Oh, have you?
Oh yeah.
Oh God.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Some of our friends, like Eric from BOF, was like, don't be one of those guys that watches a movie just to pick it apart. I'm like, I can't help it, man. It's my second time
watching it. Well, but that's not fair. I mean, it's Star Wars, right? I mean,
I love Star Wars.
Yeah, when you love something like that, whether you love the movie specifically or not, when you love a franchise like that, yeah, you're going to watch a movie and try to pick it apart, because you're going to try to figure out what went wrong or you know, I mean, that's not really like you going out there and trying to be negative for the sake of negativity, because you didn't want to not like the movie.
That, and see, that's the thing. So, we're gonna shift gears again. So, upon a second viewing of The Rise of Skywalker, I can officially say I'm very disappointed with the sequel trilogy as a whole, which I wasn't really feeling that way before.
Yeah. You know, I think we might have actually talked about this off air last week.
Yeah.
Like when we were done recording, we kind of talked about this, and I'm glad you just mentioned that, because I have the same feeling now.
Yeah. And it's, and that hurts me actually, because in the beginning, it struck all the right chords, right? Because it was familiar. It felt really good. It was treading on familiar territory that I felt the prequels missed, and just totally, you know, shit the bed. It just didn't feel like Star Wars to me, right? Because I'm an OT person. So I was ecstatic to get back in the saddle and to be introduced with a character like Rey, who, you know, a big question mark mystery character. And I appreciated that. And I appreciated, you know, the understanding that the characters that I grew up with, that I fell in love with, that really got me immersed and involved in this franchise and this universe, were going to be supporting characters, right? Because they would be passing the baton. And so I was okay with, you know, their limited roles, and that, you know, certain deaths would be inspirations for our heroes, and our villains would be, you know, they would be the catalysts of those things. You know, everyone knows how I feel about The Last Jedi. I mean, that exceeded all expectations. It continues to baffle me. And I'm continuously just kind of picking up on new things, and I'm like, wow, that's profound. Like I just totally, you know, some of the nuances in there are just so deep, and it's a again, my opinion, I think it's beautiful. And I thought, wow, this is the pinnacle of everything that I ever wanted Star Wars to be. And I could see a deliberate intention to kind of move the franchise forward, move it in a new direction and challenge our expectations and actually give us a story. And I know Nathan and a few others are going to come at me, but give us a story that was a bit more sophisticated and a bit more character driven and showed us some of those layers and those real things that, yeah, you know, are represented in all human beings. They are who, you know, they represent who we are. Like, I'm not the same person I was 5 years ago, you know? So how would I expect Luke Skywalker to be the same person after 30 years, right? Especially after dealing with loss. Yeah. I mean, we're not the same people we were last week. Things have happened.
Yeah, you know,
go ahead.
For me, the reason why I started this is just because of the shifting narrative. So, you know, whether you liked or disliked the concepts that were introduced in The Last Jedi, right? At least they followed up on it took things in a new direction. That's for sure. But you could watch Force Awakens and The Last Jedi back to back, and that's fine. But then what happens with Rise of Skywalker for me, those decisions, I felt like, because, and maybe this is because I love The Last Jedi and I love the themes and I love the concepts for the most part that were introduced in that movie. But Rise of Skywalker soured me in, and this is more in like looking back on it, the more I thought about it, soured me on it now to the point where I don't know that I want to watch that as a complete trilogy now, because I just really don't like a lot of the directions that it went in.
Yeah.
But that's probably a lot. I'm sure I'll watch these movies plenty of times. You know, like I've watched the original the prequel trilogy movies many times, despite my issues with them, because it's Star Wars at the end of the day. And there is cool stuff in Rise of Skywalker. You know, I mean, look, I don't like the Ewoks, but I watch Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's good stuff in Return of the Jedi too, but I mean, these things happen. It's Star Wars. There's always going to be things that aren't perfect. But I have not seen Rise of Skywalker again yet because I did not take advantage of the early access because yes. I've already pre-ordered. So what I do with every Star Wars movie, or at least the ones that the sequel trilogy, what I've been doing is, because I own multiple versions, right, of every Star Wars movie on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've owned multiple versions of them since VHS, but currently... the Blu-ray. So for this sequel trilogy, what I've been doing is I've been buying the Steelbook and then a regular copy.
Right.
Because I get the, you know, and that's just what I've been doing just as a collector. Because I like Steelbooks and I also like to have the regular version of it. So those are going to come with digital copies. So I'm not going to buy a digital copy and then get one.
Right.
I've already paid for it. So I'm just going to wait till the end of the month, hopefully, if there's mail, to get it and then rewatch it at that point. I haven't rewatched it yet. I'm still interested and fascinated to see what my reaction is going to be watching it a second time, because I do feel, I think one of two things is going to happen, and I think it's going to depend really on what my mood is at the time. I'm either going to nitpick the hell out of it because yep. I am now so aware of these things that I was not crazy about, that I have now spent more time thinking about than I did watching it, right?
Yeah.
Or I'm just going to be like, I understand the things I wasn't crazy about. I've accepted them, and I'm just going to like be entertained. I'm just not sure which direction I'm going to go at that point. Well, I don't know that you're... Are you able... I think you're at the point now, though, with any Star Wars movie where I don't know that you could just kind of sit back.
No, I can't. No, I do. I analyze the shit out of it. But I think the thing is, because The Last Jedi gave us some new fodder to play with in terms of people's decisions and actions being a bit more real, I'd say, you know, a bit more dimensional. having, and I'll give you an example, having Kylo Ren go to the Emperor in his sickened state to kill him, only for Emperor Palpatine to reveal his fleet. I'm like, why didn't Kylo Ren just kill him right there and take it? Right? Like,
right.
That kind of shit was like, yeah, now that's not working for me anymore, like, at all. Because, you know, Palpatine is clearly, and then I'm like, and then Snoke, like, that, you know, why even revisit Snoke? Like, I made Snoke, like, so what, like, and what was the purpose of that? Why didn't you just have a clone body for yourself then? You know what I mean? It was like all this stuff started playing in my mind, and I'm like, that none of this stuff is making sense. And I'll give you another one, because this is the one that's actually pissing me off more than anything. Is if J.J. Abrams wrote The Force Awakens and had an intention of doing some other things, right, with his universe, and then came back and revisited The Rise of Skywalker, why did Leia send Rey to find Luke when she could have trained her all along? That.
Right. So you, right. That, you really get, is there another franchise or even just one movie in general that you analyze that much?
Lord of the Rings.
Really?
Probably. But.
But that kind of a finite thing in that sense of, like, that's one story that existed already, and this was telling of it.
And the thing is about, and or even maybe the Harry Potter franchise, but it's different because, to your point, it's rooted in literature, and I accept the fact that some of these things, some of these plots, can be left on the cutting room floor because they don't serve the main narrative from a visual perspective. I get that. But no, I mean, if I were to cut those out, there is no one. I mean, Star Wars is the one solid franchise that, you know, I've examined, I've studied, watched more times than I can count. I mean, if you were to play me in Trivial Pursuit, you'd lose. Like, I'm pretty, you know, this is my thing. This is my jam.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Lord of the Rings is a tough comparison only because that's not something where they were going to evolve that over. Like, it's not like they were going to make a new Lord of the Rings trilogy and, you know, introduce new characters. And I mean, that's just.
But yet they did. You know, some characters are.
They made. No, but you know what I mean, though. Like, well, they're not. There's differences from between the book and the movie. But I mean, like, you know, like, if we're looking at the Lord of the Rings, the source material, let's say, like, the original Star Wars original trilogy. Like, yeah, I mean, you had The Hobbit, but The Hobbit existed too. So, right. I mean, despite the differences between the book and the movie, like, it still was a thing. Yeah. So it's different in that sense. I think you can critique things about or any movie, actually. Right. But I think with Star Wars, with you, it's because you have gotten so deep into that mythology, and because there's been so much content that you've consumed when it comes to Star Wars, books and video games and all that stuff, it gives you more opportunity too, right?
Yeah. So if I were to compare this to something else, right, like Back to the Future, for example.
Okay.
Like, Marty McFly is a good guy, right? And he stays that way the entire time. Biff Tannen is bad guy, stays that way the entire time. There's no shifting of those things, right? Those are absolutes. I think that is the problem. Like, and you get some interesting stuff. Like, you can see Biff at his worst, and then you can see Biff at his dumbest, given some of the alterations in the timeline. And that gives you at his core, he's still who he is. I'm not saying that Kylo Ren didn't have any room to evolve, but when you get his redemption, when you see his redemption, it's kind of like, what? Why? Because Palpatine needed to be the big bad, like, because there always needs to be a puppet master. And I felt like it's just lazy. Like, you could have done so much more with Kylo. And it was just a missed opportunity. And there's also some things that I think are unforgivable. Like, I remember, I don't know if you remember this conversation, but when The Force Awakens came out, there were some conversations around the uncomfortableness of Kylo, like, basically assaulting Rey by, like, going into her mind, right? Like, there was, like, you know, there were some undertones there, and I'm like, he was extracting stuff. He was trying to get into her mind, and people were like, oh, that's, like, uncomfortable because it's a, you know, male dude kind of pushing up on a female. And, like, there's a lot of like, legit tension there. And I'm not going to say sexual tension, because I actually feel like that whole thing was forced in a way that, that was unjustified. Like, that end kiss, dude, I rolled my eyes to a coma, bro. I had it on the couch again. I was like, oh boy.
Yeah.
I can't, I just can't, I don't get it. So,
So, anyway, it's available now, everyone.
Yeah, so go check it check out. It I out. Mean, I'm always free to argue. And look, here's the thing. I'm not going to change if you enjoyed that film, I'm not going to change how you feel about the film. And that's not the intention of me expressing my opinions. I just have a voice and I have a platform. And so here it is. If you disagree, great. You're not going to change my opinion of the film. So I would just prefer, if you have a reaction to anything I say, like, bring it up and let's have a civil conversation, but don't come at me, because I don't do well with that.
Yeah.
Like, I just,
if you come at Aaron, he'll start arguing things he actually believes in. He'll just argue against it just for the sake of argument.
I mean, the thing is, I said it on Twitter. I was like, look, bottom line, it's not for me.
Right.
It wasn't made for me. And
you're talking about Rise of Skywalker specifically, yeah, right?
It's not for me.
Right.
This one felt like it.
Well, because surreal. See, for you now, so, and this is why people say, well, what does that mean it's not for you? So, for you, as somebody who's one, passionate about Star Wars, which is not necessarily a thing, because there are people who were passionate about Star Wars that did love the movie, right? So,
right.
It's not that part. That's not for you. It's the fact, though, that if you're someone who loves to, like, nitpick and really look at all these little details and stuff about Star Wars, and likes, you know, and you loved a lot of the stuff that happened in The Last Jedi, then, right, The Rise of Skywalker is probably not for you, because you had all these little things and, like, continuity things and things that you were getting all fired up over that most people watching that movie might not even have thought twice about.
Sure.
And it bothered you. And on top of the fact that, you know, the things from The Last Jedi that you loved, many of those got dropped in this movie and all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say for you specifically,
yes,
that it's not for you.
I would say that that's like 2/3 of the equation there. The other piece of that is that I just don't think it's a well-made film in general. I think it's lazy.
Like, in what sense? Like the writing, or because I think it
the
looks
writing,
good.
The
movie looks
the
really good.
Is
right?
Really bad.
Yeah.
The ode to fan service is over the top. Now, I don't mind fan service. Believe me, I love fan service. I love Marvel films, and those movies are full of fan service. One of the things I wrote was,
yeah,
on Twitter was, you know, Marvel gets a bad rap all the time for allegedly undercutting emotional moments with levity, right? With humor.
Well, we've spoken Rise before that we feel like that's overblown.
That's total bullshit.
Yeah, well,
but
it's overblown, definitely.
Sure.
Yeah.
The issue with Rise of Skywalker is that Rise of Skywalker undercuts emotional moments with fan service. And that, to me, is egregious. That's worse, in my opinion. And it takes the air out of a room. Like, for an example, the redemption of Kylo Ren with the, you know, through the interaction with Han Solo, it's a beautiful scene. it's great to see them relive that moment in The Force Awakens. What's not cool, in my opinion, is when he's like, "Dad," and he looks at Han Solo, and Han just smiles and goes, "I know." I'm like, really? We had to bring back the "I love you, I know" thing without actually, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's like, and for folks who dug it, like, yeah, okay, cool. Like, you like that? Like, you know, he's calling back to Empire Strikes Back. That's fine, but I mean, does Han Solo say that to everybody? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I don't. It's just not for me. It's not. And like I said, you know, I love fan service. Like, Rogue One.
It's funny when we talk about, right, that Rogue One is service great.
Everywhere, and I yeah. loved every bit of it.
Right. J.J. Abrams, you know, we've talked about this before. He sometimes that's his weak spot. But I was talking to somebody in my office this week because they were like, you know what movie I actually saw for the first time? I never even knew it was a thing. I was like, what? They're like, Super 8. And I was like, oh, all right. He's like, yeah, I loved it. It was so 80s and this and that. And, you know, Super 8 is an example of a movie that J.J. Abrams made that was really an homage or a love letter to, like, the movies he grew up watching, right? Yeah. Like Spielberg, big types, yeah. like Spielberg stuff.
Sure.
And it's got that feel. Now, without paying, like, fan service, it just, because it had the feel of...
Right.
He has lost a little bit of that ability now, I think, sometimes. Like, he sometimes goes overboard, like, when he starts directing, like, these franchise films where he feels like he has to just lay it on.
And it is thick.
Yes. Yeah.
Very, very thick. I mean, yeah. from the Send Leia My Love, the I Know, you know, there's a lot of it. There's a lot. Even the comment by Luke Skywalker after Rey tries to get rid of the lightsaber, and he's like, you know, a Jedi's lightsaber is his most precious, whatever. Like, even that is laying it on thick, because it's like, look, you know, kind of all of you Last Jedi lovers, like, he's learned. And I like that arc a little bit. But again, I mean, after you're getting beaten over the head with all of these things over and over the head. You're like, where is the originality to this film? You know, and it starts right away with Palpatine. You know, the path to the dark side is no. What is it? The dark side is a pathway to many abilities that some consider to be unnatural. Like that, great. You have that just tucked away in your back pocket. Like, I'm gonna say it exactly the way. So, it's fine. Where it sits now with me is like just above Attack of the Clones. Like, I prefer the Phantom Menace over Rise of Skywalker.
I mean, they're obviously very different movies. One was the beginning of a trilogy.
Yeah.
The other is the end of a trilogy, so they were accomplishing different things. Both have good things about them. I think maybe part of the reason why, and I don't want to put, I'll put a thought in your head and tell me if I'm sure. completely wrong, but I think one of the reasons why maybe you feel that way is because Phantom Menace, there are good things about it, and there are some obvious bad things about it, but I think for the most part it's a fairly like benign film in that like it's the beginning of a trilogy,
right?
So yeah, there's some bad things, Jar Jar and all that stuff, and you know, obviously I wasn't a fan of like little Anakin, but I mean, there's whatever, that's just a part of the film. But like, that movie comes and goes, and it's like, okay, it's not the most exciting film for the most part. I mean, there's right. some exciting moments, but like, it's not like you could sit there and pick that movie apart and be like, because it was the beginning of something. So it was setting
a table.
Yeah, it was setting the table, and it wasn't pulling from like years of of history in a way, because it's going back before everything else that we had seen before.
Right, but the thing is too, it didn't rely on the things that came before.
That's like, what I mean.
It had already established, like, it was like, this is the universe.
Yeah.
This is what the universe looked like before those things that you're familiar with.
Yeah.
And that I appreciate.
Right.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Whether you like all of the decisions or not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, 100%. That's you hit the nail right on the head. Now, the problem with this film, with The Rise of Skywalker, is that it just uses all of the things that came before it as tropes for this film. Like, everything from the, I'm going to show you how your friends die again, you know, I'm going to show you that. There's going to be this epic space battle above us, and you're just going to watch it. Oh, and you're the one who brought them here, blah, blah, blah. And I feel your anger. And, like, all of that is repetitive. And we had gone from a film, again, like The Force Awakens, that set a table, right? Pulled all fans in, the old ones, new ones, great, introduced new characters. The Last Jedi took that idea and spun it on its head and pushed it a little further, again, in my opinion. And then The Rise of Skywalker puts us right back to familiar, right back to here's all the stuff that you love from the original trilogy that we're just going to throw into this film. There was no thought process I'm sure there was lots of thinking that went into this, but to this viewer, it just felt like, yeah, we're going to do this again. We're going to go, you love that shit? You love that shit from that movie? Psh, I'm dropping it in there. Oh, you like that over there? It's going to be in this movie too. You know what I mean? And so that's lazy to me. That feels lazy. But hey, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Well. Anyway,
I think I've exhausted enough time and energy.
Yeah,
talking about The Rise of Skywalker.
Yes, you have.
It is over. This is the last time you hear about it from me.
Okay.
I'm sure you're
writing this down.
Hold really on. Believe that.
March 17th.
Oh God.
Okay. Coronavirus. Aaron says last time. Got it. Okay. Great. Yeah.
I'll tell you what though. I have an urge these days. Uh-oh. You know, given the circumstances, to kind of catch up on older films.
Okay.
Like Hook.
Like Hook.
I love Hook.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a great film. Although I do remember watching it and feeling disappointed for some reason.
When was this?
Huh?
Like recently?
No. Like when I was a kid, I could kind of remember kind of feeling, because it was like, you know, you have a memory of Peter Pan, and then you're kind of treated with this. And as I've gotten older, my appreciation for it has grown. I enjoy that film a lot. Still don't understand how Hook gets eaten up by a hollow alligator, but that's fine. I watched Blade again.
The first one?
Yeah, and holy shit. That film has aged well. That is a great movie.
Yeah, you know, and Blade 2 is really, the Guillermo del Toro.
I like that movie.
Directed Blade 2 is really good. The third one, not so much. But yeah, I mean, it's a movie that's been forgotten about, right? So, I mean, we talked about it, I think, last week, right? How, like, back in the day, most comic book movies were usually, you know, there was some bad, not most, but there was some bad ones, especially Marvel-related ones. Mm-hmm. But Blade is one of those ones that wasn't like that. But it gets lost in the shuffle now, I think, because people just don't really talk about it hardly ever.
Yeah, so it's a New Line Cinema film.
Right.
So for all of those folks that may not know, that's a Time Warner run studio, or Warner Brothers studio. And this came out '98. So before the Raimi films, Spider-Man films, but it was dark. There was no, you know, there was no Marvel logo flashed in the beginning. It was a rated R film. The director that I wasn't really familiar with, Stephen Norrington, directed the film, the first one. And dude, I mean, That opening scene, that film itself, like from start to finish, is good. It's exciting. It's a lot of fun to watch. And yeah, I think you're 100% right. I don't think it gets enough love, but the love I have for it makes me very nervous for the next iteration of it, because I'm like, can it beat that? Can we go further than that? That's a rated R film. That's a badass film. This dude is impaling people with spikes on the wall. He's cutting off hands. Some dude's getting a blowjob in a club that's spraying people with blood. Like, this Marvel ain't gonna do any of that shit.
No, so they're certainly not. No.
that's a great movie.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe because the third one was so crappy that
they try to go mainstream.
Yeah. Is that what, yeah, that's, I guess.
I mean,
that's,
dude, you got Triple H in there.
Yeah.
You got Ryan Reynolds, who, I think this was like he was like just, you know, really kind of breaking out and like, you know, was going to be that guy. And Jessica Biel is coming out of her, what was it, Seventh Heaven run, and
yeah,
from, you know what I'm saying.
David Goyer,
so had all of that, right? All of those, like, we're going, yeah, mainstream. We're going Fantastic Four. Ooh. Tim Story, Fantastic Four.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's it, and then now they're going to be redoing Blade. So I guess,
yeah, with a great actor.
Yes,
so. I'm sure it'll be great.
I'm wondering if this new Blade will get people to become more interested in that the previous version, or will it just become like completely forgotten about? I guess it depends.
You know, yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, because like
just a whole generation of people that may not have seen this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure there are. Know. Yeah.
I mean, seriously, like folks who they're like 20 now.
Yeah.
You know, if they were born then, you know, it's crazy. Crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, and you know, it's interesting because like you'll see every once in a while, like it'll be on,
yeah,
or Blade 2 will be on, or like the Punisher with Thomas Jane, like, yeah, that movie will be on. That movie's on actually a decent amount.
Mm.
But for the most part, like a lot of the stuff that, like pre-MCU stuff, you don't see a lot of.
No.
You know?
It's funny. Thomas Jane's Punisher. Punisher was another big character of mine when I was a kid growing up. I loved the Punisher. That film was like, didn't really do it for me. I think it was Travolta that killed it for me. I think he was like a little too much over the top, and some of that like mafioso family type stuff that was in it just wasn't played off very well.
Yeah, I have a lot of issues with that movie. First of all, it was, the main issue is the fact that the storyline that they used for it was a take on the Garth Ennis Welcome Back Frank storyline from the comics, mm-hmm, which is one of my all time favorite comic book stories. I've said it before, Garth Ennis is my favorite comic book writer of all time. He's the guy who did Preacher, and he's just fantastic. So he does Welcome Back Frank, and that reinvented the character, right? That brought the Punisher back into like the public conscious as far as comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a watered down version of that storyline. And I just like some of the creative decisions, like, again, look, I understand that, you know, to save money on the budget, like, they didn't shoot it in New York. They shot it. But, like, did they have to take it out of New York? Like, you couldn't shoot it somewhere else and call it New York? I mean, that happens pretty much in every movie ever.
Right.
You know? So, like, I mean, I'm not saying you got to do, like, Friday the 13th Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan, where it's Manhattan, but you can see the mountains of Vancouver in the background.
Right,
like,
right.
You don't got to take it to that level. But, like, I mean, you know, why did it have to be in Miami? It just loses New York being gritty, and just, it's such a part of that character that, mm-hmm, that was a mistake. You're right. John Travolta, terrible casting decision in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just doesn't come off as poor villain. Thomas Jane is good. I mean, he was fine for the role, but I just, you know, he just needed to be in a better movie. And it's not a terrible movie.
Right.
It's just, to me, like, it did not do enough justice to the source material. You know, and then we got Punisher War Zone after that, which is such a batshit crazy fun movie that everybody should watch. Just to, the sheer spectacle of that movie. I wanted to like that Thomas Jane Punisher so much more than
me too.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was at that same time as like Daredevil and That was a time where I said a lot, I wanted to like this movie so much more than I did.
I know. That, you know, it's funny. Like, I it was like Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider was a film where I was like, oh, could have been so much better. I don't know what happened with that. I like vaguely remember it. It's like not a film that sticks out into my mind. Is like, and then the second one, I don't even think I ever watched it. Or maybe I did, and I was, like, drunk, and I forgot about – I don't know. I don't even remember. But I remember when they were like, oh, it's coming out. I was like, yeah, no, I don't even – I have no interest in seeing it. And I loved Ghost Rider, too, when I was a kid. but, I mean, that was a dark time, you know? Like, Marvel was selling its rights to these characters left and right. You know, make a buck, save its business. And...
Well, I mean, they had to. I mean, people forget that the reason why they didn't have the rights to Spider-Man, I guess technically still don't, and Fantastic Four and X-Men is because they needed to get out of bankruptcy. And that's why they sold off the rights to those. Where do you stand on the Ang Lee Hulk movie?
So I initially... sort of enjoyed it a little bit initially. I think what I enjoyed the most was the relationship between Betty and Bruce. But I thought they went too deep on some of the things that make him actually tick. This is besides like Hulk, you know, Hulk dogs and like them biting his Hulk nuts and his eyes bulging out. Like, I thought they went too deep on like the daddy stuff. And it just was a little too artsy for me, I think. And he just got too big. He was like huge.
Yeah. So I remember seeing that in the theaters and liking it. When I saw it in the theaters, because there were some cool things, like there were moments in the movie where like they did like comic book type panels and stuff, which were cool, like from just a pure filmmaking standpoint. But then the more I thought about that movie, well, first of all, when Nick Nolte turned into like whatever the hell that was.
The Absorbing Man.
Well, yeah, but they never said that.
When he like bites into that.
Yeah. He becomes
that cable.
Like a translucent blob. That lost me. That whole, like, and look, I love Nick Nolte, but that whole, like, monologue that he goes on at the end of that movie, like, that movie got way too deep and way too, like you said, artsy for its own good.
Yeah.
I just, it's not a movie that I find myself watching much at all when it's on. And I think for that reason, they went in, like, a very different direction with The Incredible Hulk. Like, that movie's almost... too much action and like very little substance.
Sure.
Although I don't have a problem with that movie either that much. But you know, there's a director's cut apparently of that movie. Louis Leterrier movie? Yeah.
I just heard about that.
That they say is supposed to be like good. I don't know. I barely saw like a blurb about it, and then I don't remember. I got distracted and didn't really follow through with it. But yeah, apparently that's a thing. And now they're saying, hey, we should release that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So The Incredible Hulk, that's another film where I was like, you know what I think it is? I'm like, oh, you got me. And then, nah, you lost me. And I almost feel the same about, especially coming off of Iron Man, which I was like, man, Iron Man's smoking hot. Like, that's a great movie.
Yep.
I came out of The Incredible Hulk like, there's some things I could have done a little differently and they could have been a little better.
Right.
You know, I think the thing is about the Hulk is because it's he's an in, you know no one is that big you know no one it's, he's an inanimate object really, and so you go into that uncanny valley type thing where you're like, this doesn't really
right.
You know, and they did a great job at trying, you know, they did a sort of decent job trying to carry over some of the features of Edward Norton into the Hulk. Like there's like a scar on his cheek that kind of gets represented onto the Hulk's face. And I mean, the dude is ripped, like, vascular is all hell. but then again, he does some like really weird shit where like when he's like really raging out and he's trying to choke someone, his eyeballs start popping out of his head. I'm like, wow, chill out with that. That's a little, that looks a little unnerving. And then the story, you know, to your point before, it was just all like destruction and not no substance. So, because I think the part of that is they tried, again, going back to our conversation about fan services, they tried a little too hard to fit the TV show style Bruce Banner into this, you know, the lonely man type thing. And he's going around trying to stay undercover while helping people, you know, that kind of vibe. And it sort of worked, like when they do the whole, like he's in the dark.
Yeah.
He's in the shadow and his eyeballs, you know, turn green. I love that shit. But
I think for me at the time too, because again, we put this into context. Yeah, I mean, it followed Iron Man, but it still came at a time when it was like, the fact that it was a competently made, like, superhero film at that time was, like, cool. You know, like, you didn't necessarily have, like, these super high expectations yet.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing, too, is in the era of comic book movies, I mean, we're coming off of The Dark Knight, which blew everyone's mind away.
Right.
You know, and then we're getting comic book movies.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so, yeah, no, I agree. I was like, oh, this is different. This is like, you know.
It's funny you say that. I remember when I got my first Blu-ray player, the first three movies that I got were Iron Man, The Dark Knight, and The Incredible Hulk.
That's so funny.
And watched them in one weekend.
I got The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
I remember it like it was yesterday because I just kept on playing scenes and like looking at the definition on my my TV.
Yeah.
Holy shit, I could see like the makeup in his pores. So, you know, those films and, you know, all intents and purposes, like the Incredible Hulk. Like, I know a lot of people tend to forget about it, but I think there's a reason, because it's okay. You know, it's like, it's not Thor the Dark World, but it's like, you know, it's a little better. Just a little better. I prefer Iron Man 2 over Incredible Hulk. I think Iron Man 2 gets a rough break.
I didn't hate it. I mean, Iron Man 2 was fun. I just think that it did, again, you know, looking back at Iron Man 2 in hindsight, like, the criticisms of that movie, besides the fact that it's like, oh, okay, like, the villain, again, is kind of a similar deal.
Yeah.
But we've gotten used to that, right, when it comes to Iron Man and stuff like that. Like, that was just the thing. But, you know, if people criticize it because it was, like, too many characters and it was really just a setup for, like, the Avengers and all of that stuff. And it's like, that's became a little bit more of the norm.
Yeah.
As the MCU went on. But because of the fact that it followed, you know, Iron Man and the Incredible Hulk, you know, and then Captain America and Thor, we were like, oh, so this is what these movies are going to be. We didn't even still fully realize exactly what the MCU was going to be at that point.
Yeah. I mean, and Iron Man 2 came out before Captain America.
Yes, it's the third movie, actually. Yeah.
So, I mean, like, to me, it was just, you know, that is Disney trying to make as much money off of this thing as possible, and then realizing, oh shit, we're gonna burn out our directors, and unfortunately they did. That was the last movie Jon Favreau directed for the MCU. Yep. But there's a lot of cool shit that happens in that movie, and there's a lot of subtlety in that movie that
yeah,
that I don't know a lot of people pick up on.
Yeah, I gotta watch that again now with 2020 eyes, like, yeah, knowing now that like a movie with all of those characters is not, it's just something we've become so used to with the MCU.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm curious to watch
it.
Oh, I own them all. I own the entire MCU. Yeah, I. But that's me. I'm a completist, so I own all that stuff.
Yeah, I'll give you a little something to chew on, which I think is hilarious. So Justin Hammer is a fascinating character. Tries to model himself after Tony, and in fact, there's a little subtlety with him applying self-tanner. And so if you see, there's certain scenes where, not certain scenes, but there are scenes where he's having a conversation. You can see it on his hands. It looks weird. Like his palms are tan.
Huh.
Because he wants to look like, because Tony's in, like, you know, racing, and he's out there in like Montenegro or whatever. And he's tan and shit. So Justin Hammer is modeling himself after Tony Stark.
Okay.
It's amazing stuff. Like, it's great. I love it. So check that out. It's a conversation he has when he's like, I want my bird.
Yeah. If we wind up in what they call it, the shelter in place deal becomes a thing here in New York City, I will have plenty of time to watch Disney Plus. I haven't watched it a lot since The Mandalorian ended, but if I do wind up with a lot of time on my hands, maybe I'll start to revisit.
They dropped Frozen too early.
They did, and I will watch that. I liked the first one, actually.
And one other thing, I know we're kind of getting close to time here, but one other thing that I would say folks should check out while you are social distancing yourselves is the third season for Westworld started on HBO Go or whatever the other version.
Oh, it's on HBO, right?
On HBO, yes.
So if it's available on that, it's available on HBO Now, HBO Go.
Yeah. So it's a very, very different season, and to me, it kicked off with a bang. So.
What are they doing in this one? Did they get to Future World yet?
No. So they're in the real world.
Oh, they're in the real world.
They're in the real world. Okay. And Aaron Paul is in this show, and I really dig him. And yeah, it's about how Dolores is infiltrating the real world. So that's a really interesting story. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Because I don't want to spoil anything. But folks should certainly tune in and check that out.
There you go.
Yeah. So otherwise, I ain't got nothing else.
Man. Yeah. Yeah.
I ain't got nothing else. I feel good, though. Say that.
You feel good?
Yeah, I got a lot off my chest.
Oh, good.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Start thinking about
start getting
some more things on your chest, because we're gonna need it for next week. So
I know, dude. I mean, like, what else?
Something. Maybe. Hopefully, listen. I'll say this to everyone. I don't want you to join the conversation. I want you to figure out ways. Everyone that listens here, that's on Twitter, just piss Aaron off a little bit this week so that we can he'll have to get some stuff off his chest next week so that we can have a show. I will say this. I didn't realize. So I've watched a lot of wrestling in my life and continue to. But I will say that
a little bit about that.
I am finding empty arena wrestling shows to be completely depressing. I'm not enjoying. Now, I'm not watching anything WWE related anyway for a number of reasons, but just the whole concept of it, like, I saw a couple of videos of it. It seems just weird and depressing. And I know AEW is going to be going empty arena for the next at least 5 weeks, and which is a shame because they had a couple really big shows coming up the next couple of weeks, which will lose some steam. I'm not sure how I'm going to feel about watching that. It's just, I don't know. It just seems, it's just depressing to watch for me. Like, it's one thing for like an empty arena match. Those have happened before. There's some famous ones like the Terry Funk and Jerry Lawler one from the 80s. But that's one thing. It's a match. It's a specific thing. But entire shows empty arena, and now WrestleMania is going to be an empty arena show. It's like, what?
How do you do that?
Well, they're going to do it. Well, again, I mean, we had.
They've already committed the money to it.
Well, it's not even committing the money. It's because it's the fact that they have a schedule to keep. So, you know, they already, you know, have storylines and schedules and things in place, and you know, they had hotels booked and you know, they had, yeah, you know, things going on, and so much of their year is built around this being the culmination of stuff that, like, what do you do? Like, because we don't know when they would have been able to have it at this point. So, like, right, do you put off your entire creative direction and storyline just because you got to push WrestleMania? Like, what do you do? How do you push WrestleMania back to June or say, or July or whatever, if, and then what, do you have to hold those storylines? Like, you have to hold on to those matches? I'm
kidding. The thing is, though, they didn't have to, you know, they don't have to make it such a big deal, though, right? Like,
what do you mean?
You know, because they're going to do, what, fireworks and all that crazy shit?
Well, not in the Performance Center, they won't.
Oh, they're not doing it. Okay.
No, it's not going to be in the stadium empty. It's going to be in their WWE Performance Center in Orlando, where they've been running, they've been holding all their TV shows the last few weeks, couple weeks. So it's just going to be like in a little small space. And there was really no other way other than canceling it outright, but you can't really do that because, you know, WWE is not like UFC. So UFC, which also canceled their next three shows, they could do that because those are just their real fights that are built up. It's not like they're storyline driven. So it's like they'll just fight later on. You know what I mean? Like that you can do. But with WrestleMania, like, you've been building these storylines and stuff like that up for a while. Like, you just can't hold it off and they'll do it later on. And then in the interim, because they have weekly television, we'll do other things and then get back to this later. Like, you can't do that. So they were in a tough spot. I know Vince McMahon tried everything he could not to cancel. He was hoping that Tampa Bay would actually cancel, would shut everything down so that they could probably collect more insurance money and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now it'll be a little tough. What sucks is the independent promotions and stuff that we're all going to be running, you know, because that's become the big thing. WrestleMania week is all the indie promotions run, and there were a ton of them. And, like, people like WrestleCon, I know that the guy who runs HighSpots.com, who also runs WrestleCon, he was saying that if they had to cancel this event and issue refunds to everybody right away, like, without it being canceled by the state where they could claim insurance money and stuff, like, he might have to sell his house.
Yikes.
You know, so, like, this is that type of stuff that's going. There's a lot of wrestlers that were going to be getting, you know, big paydays and stuff to be working 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 shows that week, and now none of that is happening. It's a scary time everywhere right now, but especially in pro wrestling, where companies just are not running. And, you know, for independent talent, like, they're not salaried, so they're not getting paid if they're not working. So it's really unfortunate and scary from that perspective. But yeah, I just have to say, as a TV viewer, though, I find myself now just watching old wrestling videos, like, on YouTube, rather than, like, these empty arena live shows. Because it's just depressing to me. Like, an audience is a big part of a show. And it's just weird. I don't know. So that's my little wrestling spiel for this week, as far as you know, coronavirus wrestling and stuff. So
yeah, that's wild,
which sucks, because it's like, that's one of the things that I would, you know, be watching the crap out of right now if, mm-hmm, you know, if I was mm-hmm home, and, you know, I haven't been. So
yeah, I mean, all live sporting events, all of that canceled for this thing, man.
And right now, which is okay, because, I mean, well, the NBA shut down, but I haven't really watched a lot of
NBA, MLB, NHL.
But MLB was in spring training, so yeah, I mean, it'll feel it once, you know, in another couple weeks when opening day should have happened, when it's not there. But, and the NFL has a ways to go, so who knows. But yeah, I mean, the NHL and stuff, I mean, it's not a lot of sports. I don't really watch a lot of hockey. I don't watch a lot of basketball these days. So baseball and football are my thing. So for now, I won't feel those as much right now. But yeah, I guess we'll have to see what happens. See when everything gets back to normal.
Got it.
But let's not lose sight of the fact that I need you guys to just tweet Aaron this week.
Stop that shit.
Sorry.
Stop. No. Do not. Pissed off to get pissed off.
All right. Or send us some stuff. Throw it out there now. Send us some stuff if you want. You know, things we're talking about. You know, anything you want to hear.
Chris
would
love to do a deep dive on Harry Potter.
Yeah, that's sure. Yeah, that'll be. This is well, here. I'll give you a little.
Funny enough,
I'll give you a little taste on how that episode would go.
Just me talking.
Yeah.
So our friend from the above and beyond.
Oh, I was going to say we have a friend from above.
Well, the above and Batman Beyond podcast.
Yes.
Has been listening to our previous episodes and like wants to do another crossover on streaming related stuff. So
cool.
We can talk a lot about that.
Yeah, we can. Cause that's very relevant now. Cause that's still a thing.
Absolutely.
The only thing to talk about.
That's probably more of a thing than more of a thing than movie theaters.
Yeah. It's the only thing we can talk about right now. So why not?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, man.
All right.
Well, on that happy note, let's do the plugs and get up to here.
Sure. Fanboygarage.com. That's where you can go and check out our episodes and merch and all that fun stuff. And, of course, the social medias, the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram, at the Fanboy Garage. You can sometimes find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
And you can find me on Twitter at AAronSpeaks. That is A_A_RonSpeaks. And of course, as I've said so many times before, if you do like what you're listening to, you love the show, you want us to do well, please do leave us a 5-star review. It goes a very, very long way. And we will accept nothing less. But thank you. And that's it. We'll catch you guys on the next one.